This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of audio video coverage for the five-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast brought to you by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. And today, Adam, we have an ad read. We're big time now.
Yeah.
So the podcast today is sponsored by our friends at 1 in 100. Go to 1in100.co for a chance to win killer Pats, Celtics, Bruins, and concert tickets all in the New England area. It's 1in100.co. It's a lot of really cool ticket raffle type deal. You put money in, you get a raffle number, you get you some nice courtside seats. I don't know if the seats are that good, but they're pretty close to that. But today we have a one of my favorites down here at Gillette Stadium. It's Matt Dolliff from 98.5, the Sports Hub. And Matt, some of you might know Matt from his impersonations of Felger and Maz. Yeah. I hope most of you know him from his work covering the Patriots, but first of all, I mean, we got to talk about Felger Maz just a little bit here, Matt, and
figure that's why most people are tuning in right now.
And explain, I mean, they're nice guys, right? In real person, I think people
In person, they're way better people than they come off on the air. They say some questionable things, and they know that they say some questionable things, but you know, off the air, they're definitely, you know, different people.
For those that don't know, go check out Matt's impersonation of them. I think you do it, what, after every Monday show type deal?
It doesn't, I mean, there's no, like, set schedule to it or anything, right? But Patriots are 3-1 since I started doing it. So they think, like, oh, he only does it after they win. Yeah. Like, I wasn't going to do it after the Tennessee game because, you know, it's not like you have to reach for a negative take after a game like that.
Yeah.
So it's like,
yeah.
But, you know, they've basically beaten everybody by two. I think they've literally beaten everybody by two touchdowns. And the ones I've done. I mean, it started during the World Series, though, because they're like, as negative as they seem to be about the Patriots, they're way more negative about the Red Sox. They were ripping them all the way to a World Championship.
So it's it's
just ridiculous how, like, the team will win big and it'll be a nice, easy win. Not much to complain about. But then the next day, it's, oh my God, please, Mike, I hate it. You know, like, it's that for 4 hours. And it's just, but the way they, like, come back at me, but it's like, were we wrong? It's like, it's not that they're right or wrong.
Yeah.
Because the Vikings didn't play well on Sunday. You know, they weren't ready to go.
Yeah.
But it's just the fact that you beat a good team by two touchdowns and the whole thing was hate it.
Yeah.
And people seem to enjoy it. I didn't think it would go beyond the one video after the World Series, but like
it blew up the last one.
People just keep responding and, you know, the Patriots beat guys are starting to catch on. And
yeah.
So I guess the pressure's on to keep doing them, right? Hopefully they just went out at this point.
Yeah, right? we love it. And I think the funny part is that Maz and even Felger a little bit last week wanted to pick the Vikings. I think Maz did.
Maz did pick
the Vikings, and the Patriots come in, they beat the Vikings by two touchdowns, and it was, oh, I was wrong about the Vikings. They suck.
I actually kind of thought the Vikings had a good shot at that, winning that game too. But maybe if that game was in Minnesota, maybe. But you know, not to get into it too quickly, but I was really impressed with that win by the Pats, in some ways more than some of the wins that got more run from, you know, the press and everybody, just because it was a defensive win. You know, they played a good defense and they won, and their defense actually played really well. So I put more stock into that, in some ways more than like the Kansas City win, even though the Chiefs are a better team. But that was like a video game, you know, shootout, you know, Big 12 game. And if you can win a game against a good team like the Vikings and shut down a guy like Thielen and play good defense, in a way, I was more impressed by that.
Yeah, I would agree with that as well. And that's actually a good segue. We'll talk about Gronk. He was going to be off the top, but we'll talk about him next, and we'll just segue into the defense. Matt, I wanted to ask you, do you think this defense, it seems like after the bye week, they've kind of turned a corner. Devin McCourty told us yesterday or the day before that they're kind of doing more scheme stuff than maybe he's ever seen, which I thought was interesting. Do you think that they've turned a corner and this is the type of defense with you know, some heavy blitzing and some disguising in the back end that we're going to see moving forward?
Yeah, it seems like coming out of the bye week, it seems like they've turned a corner, but it seems like the first 10 weeks were sort of a build up to what we've seen in the last couple games. They've really, you know, expanded things as far as their creativity and bringing more pressure up front. I mean, it feels like they might feel like that's what they need to do in order to, you know, they have to confuse teams because they don't exactly have like a ton of high-end talent up and down the roster. But, yeah, I've definitely been way more creative the last couple of weeks. The thing against the Vikings was going back like, you know, 15 years, something we don't see very often. Like, you're looking at it, I was like, what is that, 10 guys in the box? Wait, what are they doing? Like, you know, wandering around. Before
everyone's like trying to figure out what the name of it is.
Exactly.
Like, everyone on Twitter has their own name for this, like, amoeba radar window.
They had one play that looked like the flying V from the Mighty Ducks before the snap. It was crazy. Yeah. But the question is like, is that gonna be their identity moving forward? Are they gonna be this defense that, you know, just confuses you that much pre-snap? Yeah. Or was that just like a one-off thing where like this is how we want to defend Kirk Cousins and all these weapons? It's just to muddy things up in the middle and, you know, keep them guessing pre-snap.
Yeah.
I don't know if they have to like use a similar defense like that against a guy like Ryan Tannehill. But, I think they've definitely turned a corner and, you know, they've definitely opened things up from what we saw earlier in the season. And, you know, I kind of want to see them get more creative or keep being creative as we go down the stretch.
Yeah, I wonder how much they say to themselves, all right, like that clearly works against a good team. Let's not put too much of it on tape and kind of save some of it for the playoffs. Right. At this point, we know we can do it. My fear is that, as you know, Patriots fans, you all want to see that kind of defense. And this is kind of the defense that we've been waiting to see, a more aggressive style of play, a little bit more blitzing, kind of more exotic pressure schemes up front, using their knowledge and kind of their advantage of being a veteran defense to their advantage. But then we could see against the Dolphins a complete vanilla game plan where they kind of go back to, you know, the old style of Patriots defense in the last couple of years, bend but don't break, and they're kind of playing basic coverages and maybe firing a slot blitz or a linebacker blitz here and there, but it's certainly not, you know, the exotic type stuff that we saw against Minnesota. And it worries me that maybe, you know, if we stay on here and everyone starts talking about and writing about how they've turned this corner and how this is now the new defense, then they're just going to revert back to the other style until maybe we see it in, you know, a showdown with Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs or against the Steelers in the playoffs or against Houston or wherever it may be, and maybe it comes back then.
Yeah, I do think it's been a little game plan specific over the last two games, because against the Jets you saw more blitzing from the secondary, and you didn't see quite as much of it against the Vikings. They did a lot of stunts and things like that against the Vikings, so I think that's something you'll see on a week-to-week basis more often. But yeah, I think they're mostly tailoring it to the opponent, because one thing against the Vikings was they moved Jason McCourty inside so he could go up against Thielen more often, and that left J.C. Jackson as the starting outside corner. I don't know if that's something you're going to see every single game moving forward. So it'll be interesting to see how they defend the Dolphins.
Every time I ask Belichick about the pressure on the quarterback, he's always like, it depends on the game. It's game plan specific. Like, some games we're going to blitz, some games we're not going to blitz. Adam, do you think that they've turned a corner defensively? Like, is this Patriots team going to start winning games with their defense like they did against the Vikings?
I mean, it really appeared that they did against Minnesota. And in some years past, that's what you kind of see in the second half of the season. And then, you know, then there's always the, you know, the game where they fall apart again. But, you know, but I feel like, you know, the way they played, the thing that stuck out to me the most that I think is a harbinger of things to come, if you want to look at it that way, is their open field tackling and their ability to stop guys in yards after the catch. And I guess that, you know, goes into this game against the Dolphins. When I look at the Dolphins, they're a team that is, you know, I feel like Tannehill is more effective on checkdowns and short throws and stuff like that. I feel like that's more their offense. So if they can, you know, contain these Dolphins receivers and backs and whoever, you know, off short throws and limit the yards after catch, I think that's another sort of sign that the defense is getting better, because that's one of those things that really haunted them, especially at the beginning of the season. You know, those that, like, you know, were ad nauseum with the shallow crossers and everything like that. I think the Dolphins could challenge them in that respect too, with just short passes, you know, over the middle to the sideline in the flat, where, you know, they give their receivers chances to make plays in space. Now, you know, if the Patriots can, you know, do what they did against the Vikings, which is, you know, limit those plays to, you know, just, you know, very little after the catch, then I think you're going to see something, you know, maybe build towards the end of the season. And that's like, you know, when I looked at the defense at the beginning of the year, that was, you know, sort of the biggest frustration you saw is, you know, little plays turning into big ones. And, you know, that tackling in open space is such a huge deal in today's NFL with the way offenses go. So, you know, if you're looking for something for this game, that's what I'm kind of looking for, because I feel like Tannehill's that type of quarterback where he's just not like a guy that's going to be so effective downfield. But that offense, the little short to intermediate passing game is where they're going to try to hurt them.
Yeah, I think that that's what they tried to do in the first quarter of that game in week four. And the Patriots actually did a pretty nice job of covering those crossing routes, and it kind of got to Gase's play calling a little bit. And he started throwing more vertical passes, which kind of plays into the Patriots' hands. And that's when the game started to kind of unravel for them. So I expect them to go back to trying to, you know, attack with crossers. They tried to throw some screens behind the line of scrimmage in that game early too. And the Patriots really anticipated those well and sniffed those out. So we'll see. I wrote about it today. The Dolphins need to come with a completely different game plan in this game from what they did in week four. That game plan just was clearly not the way to go on both sides of the ball. So we'll see what happens. All right, Matt, we got to get your Gronk take, because everybody has a Gronk take now. It's like kind of we all have to have a Gronk take. What is wrong with Rob Gronkowski? Is there anything wrong with Rob Gronkowski? And, you know, why hasn't he been as effective? He admitted it today that he just hasn't been.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to make the injury excuse, but I've been saying to you for weeks, I just think either the ankle or the back or a combination of the two is just really slowing him down. And, like, obviously he's not injured enough where he can't play or he can't practice in full. But the fact that he's been on and off the injury report with both of these injuries tells you that there's something there that he's had to work through all season. And I feel like it's just something that's he can keep it together. He can hold it together for the whole season, but he just doesn't have that usual burst and the usual power that we're used to seeing from him. We saw it against the Vikings, you know, catching a pass and getting tackled one-on-one, stopped at the line. I think it was that play that got challenged, and then the referees overturned it. That's usually a play where you see him just, like, swat the guy away and, you know, get another 20 yards after the catch. And, I mean, like, it shouldn't shock anybody to say that he's not the same player now that he was when he was, you know, 22, 23 years old.
Right.
Like, 2011, 2012.
I mean, when that body's he's got to be like 35, 40 in football terms.
He's got the body of injuries. Injury wise, you know, he's got the body of a 35-year-old at this point.
Yeah.
It's one of these guys that he probably will drop off quickly. Are we seeing that right now? I mean, it's hard to really say otherwise. It's just, to me, it's just shocking that he's been a virtual non-factor in so many games. And I think you see glimpses, you see flashes of the Gronk we're used to seeing in some of these games. You saw it at the end of the Kansas City game.
Yeah.
He made a really good catch against Buffalo, I think. Like, if there's a play where, you know, it's a little bit downfield and Brady trusts him enough where he can put the ball in a spot where only he can catch it.
Yeah.
He's come up with some really nice catches.
Yeah.
And it's just, that's not seeing
his game now.
Yeah. You're not seeing it on like almost every single target like you usually see.
Yeah.
And it's strange to me because you saw it in week one, he dominated. He dominated against the Titans. That was, here we go again. It's going to be that for the first 4 weeks, at least without Edelman.
Yeah.
Since then, it's really just shown up in these little blips.
It's amazing. His receiving, I think he's at like 500 yards for the year, and he's missed a few games. But Adam, what are you seeing with Gronk?
I think it's the same thing. I totally agree. I think it's these injuries. Like those are the type of injuries that can really limit your movement, your explosiveness. I mean, if you have an ankle injury or a back injury, even as a regular person, just getting around isn't you know, let alone playing football at the highest level. I mean, come on. So I think this is a guy that's had injury problems in the past. And like you said, I mean, you know, this is a 35-year-old body and however old he is. So, so I think it's really just that. I just really think it's a combination of injuries and a culmination of the injuries he's had over his career. I mean, you know, you almost are surprised that he's lasted this long with some of the back injuries he's had. So I think that's really it. I don't know. I never like to be the person that projects like, okay, this is it. He's never going to be, you know, like a dominant player again, because you never know. you know, like you never know if, like, you know, it during this next off season, he, you know, he completely heals up and he gets one more year or whatever of, you know, Rob Gronkowski type production. But, you know, it's clear to me that, you know, these injuries, you know, they really, really limit you in terms of what you can do on the field. So I think he's battling through them. I think he obviously wants to, you know, be the type of player he was before. But I mean, it's just tough when you're out there with those specific injuries. I mean, you know, everybody who's had back problems before knows, you know, what that can do to you just in day-to-day life, as opposed to, you know, playing football.
I feel like we're underestimating the back injury.
Yeah.
We're talking about a guy with three back surgeries.
I know.
Well, that has to affect him, at least as a blocker. It has to be.
That was his big thing coming out of the draft. I mean, obviously, when you watch the tape of Rob Gronkowski in college, he would have been a first-round pick if it wasn't for the injuries that were piling up on him, and that's why he fell to the second round. I think the back injury, the ankle injury, you know, what we're seeing out of him is that, you know, I think Michael Lombardi, old Patriots exec, was kind of the first one to have this take, but he's now become a builder of speed, right? He's now a freight train where once he gets rolling, he's fast, but until he gets up to that top speed, you know, it's kind of plodding. And one thing that teams are doing is they're really getting in his face at the line of scrimmage, and they're not allowing him to open up, and they're not allowing him to get to that top speed. And then anytime that he's trying to cut you know, what, in a, on a dig route or back to the quarterback on a curl or a hitch or something like that, there's just no explosiveness there at the top of the route, whether it's the ankle, it's the back. I think it's both, because, you know, the back injury speaks to just hip fluidity and flexibility. Some of those things that, you know, being able to sink your hips and move out in and out of a cut, you can't do that with a bad back. And that ankle, obviously, there's no push off there. There's no explosiveness when you push off of your feet. So I think that, you know, when you watch him run a seam like he did against the Jets, you know, obviously catching that touchdown pass, you watch him run a fade on the outside, the Chiefs. Exactly. You know, you can have those situations where he looks like he's fast. He looks like he's the old Rob Gronkowski. But the second you start setting him over the middle on some of those crossing patterns or cuts, you know, dig routes or out routes, that kind of stuff, there's just no separation there. And really the only time that they can get separation for him is when they run play action, and then they get that linebacker to, you know, take a false step or bite on the play fake. And then you're able to kind of see him get open after that. But I'm like with Adam usually on this, that you never want to end a player's career, right? You never want to say this guy is done. I would like to hope that maybe they're saving some of that juice for the playoffs, and maybe they're saving some of the routes and some of the schemes that they have that can help him get open for the playoffs. But right now he's looking like a player that is just, you know, I don't think he's just another guy quite yet, but he's an average NFL tight end at this moment in time right now. He's like probably somewhere between the 10th to 15th best tight end in the league, which I can't believe we're saying that about Gronk. Because it's like every year this guy is healthy, he's been an all pro pretty much. So it's pretty remarkable. All right. Last thing on the offensive side of the ball that we wanted to touch on, this running back group, James White, Rex Burkhead, Sony Michel. I think they
add Devlin in there now.
Devlin, yeah, we can put the fullback in there. Cordero Patterson in there too.
Yeah.
Those three guys, though, I believe tallied like something like 40 touches in that Minnesota game. Obviously, they're a huge part of that game plan. I don't know if that will be the case going forward, but I mean, in terms of just, I think a lot of people want to label this team as a run first team. I don't know if it's a run first team, but it's definitely a running backs oriented team.
I wouldn't say they're run first at all, but I'd say they're definitely trying to have like a more balanced attack. You saw against the Jets, especially with the way they ran the ball pretty well, and then they were able to set up play action.
Yeah,
which was hugely effective against the Jets. And I think they're trying to balance that attack out a little more. You saw him get involved more in the passing game, though, against the Vikings, which I think was a game plan specific thing.
Yeah.
Where they wanted to, you know, work the short areas of the field, get the ball out quickly, to, you know, neutralize that pass rush. And they clearly schemed it up pretty well, at least on that opening drive where the Vikings.
That was incredible.
They were playing to leave exactly one guy open every play
that
defense.
That was some incredible scheme. I mean, obviously, those types of opening drives are often well, not often, pretty much always pre-planned by the offensive coordinator. You know, he comes into the game with maybe 10 plays that he has scripted right off the top. And it was like on that opening drive, every single play that McDaniels had scripted worked.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was pretty incredible. Like 15 yards here, 15 yards there.
Yeah. I think this running back group, Adam, is just, I mean, we've been talking about Sony Michel. We obviously both really like him a lot, but it's just, this might be one of the deeper running back groups that they've had in a while, just in terms of all the different skill sets that these guys present to the table.
Yeah. I think the name of the game with this group is versatility.
Yeah.
I think that's what they're sort of aiming for here by using all these different guys. And, you know, it helps having Burkhead back too. But, you know, I think James White has gotten better as a ball carrier, you know, going straight downhill. He's gotten a little bit better at that. You know, Sony presents somebody who can do a little bit of everything once he starts, you know, getting a little bit more comfortable in the passing game. And then, you know, even with Patterson, I mean, he's had some good runs. So, I mean, and he's like the speed guy. So, so I think with having these guys, it's not necessarily about being a run-oriented team or a pass-oriented team. I think it's just having options and, you know, going into a game and saying, okay, well, you know, we're going up against this team that has this set of skill and we can counter it with so-and-so. And so I think they're sort of on their way to achieving that. I don't think it's a finished product yet, but the better and better Sony gets and the more experienced he gets, they're getting closer to the offense that they are looking for here.
Yeah, I think having Burkhead back is a big part of that because he's the one guy on the team where, like, you really don't know whether they're doing a run or a pass when he's on the field. I think especially early with Sony Michel, you knew there was a run play when he was on the field. And James White, you know, most of the time it's going to be a pass when he's out there. So I think you're going to see more of that pony formation with the two running backs. Evan's a big fan of that.
Big pony fan.
And, I think you'll see more of that moving forward. And I think the fact that they're getting Sony Michel more involved in the passing game, too, should help them open things up in that regard where the defense is going to have to, you know, guess a little bit what they're doing.
Yeah, I think the old coaching saying is that, you know, first for when you're designing a game plan, you look at your own players, then you look at formations that you can use to exploit the other team. And I think that's something that Josh McDaniels just does about as good as anybody, is really scheming up ways with formations. And I think that people, you know, some people have fallen in love with Cordell or Patterson. Some people have gone the other way and really don't like him. You know, some people that work at your station there. But I think the point is that a lot of the things that they're able to do with him have him as a threat, lining up both at receiver and in the backfield as a ball carrier, whether it's fly sweeps or just in traditional running back sets, allows them to really keep the defense guessing. And you can see a whole lot of different looks. And not only you don't know who's going to carry the ball necessarily in some of those sets, but you also don't know where the run is going to come from. You know, is it going to be an end around? Is it going to be right, from under center? Is it going to be out of shotgun? There's just so many different ways to attack a defense and so many vulnerabilities for the defense to expose that way that, you know, even if Cordell Patterson isn't going to have 1,000 yards from scrimmage and 10 touchdowns and these huge gaudy fantasy numbers, the puzzle that he kind of presents, or the chess match that he kind of presents for opposing defensive coordinators when they go up against the Patriots, has been, I think, really fun to watch how Josh McDaniels has used him in those types of situations. And then that obviously feeds into the play action passing game and the screen game and all those things. I think a lot of what the Patriots are doing with the running game is just putting it on tape. They want these see it on tape that the Patriots can run the football. They can run the football with Devlin on the field. They can run it out of shotgun. They can run it on fly sweeps. They can run it out of bunch sets. They can run it when they spread you out. So they have all these different formations and all these different personnel groupings all on tape. So then when these teams look at that, now all of a sudden they're thinking about it, and then you hit them with the play action pass game. You hit them with the deep passing game. You hit them with all these other things that they're not worried about, they're not thinking about. That's when you can really start to get cooking on offense. And I think that's like kind of when you are preparing for the Patriots in the Super Bowl or in a playoff game coming up here. I don't want to say Super Bowl yet. Let's say playoff game coming up here.
Know if they're going to be at home.
Yeah.
Or they're going to get a bye. We don't even know any of that yet.
If you're the Houston Texans or you're the Kansas City Chiefs or the Los Angeles Chargers, you're looking at the Patriots game tape and you're saying they can run it, they can sweep it, they can screen it, they can throw it deep, they can throw it to the short, they can throw it intermediate. You know, here are the three things that we're going to stop. And then the Patriots are so good at adapting to that, that they'll just do the other three things that you're not thinking about. So I think that a lot of it is just putting it on tape. And the Patriots have done a nice job of putting a whole lot of different stuff on tape and to kind of, you know, give a lot – defensive coordinators a lot of sleepless nights, I would say, trying to come up with all of it, even if we haven't necessarily seen them average, you know, 35 points a game and, you know, come out like gangbusters. There's still a lot of information to process. All right. There's a game this weekend. It's not all just about the Patriots. The Miami Dolphins going down to South Beach. It's going to be about 80 degrees. It might rain, which I think could be in the Patriots' favor if it's cloudy and rainy.
Any kind of weather, I think, would favor the Patriots.
Yeah, but
they're usually better prepared than the other team.
Tom Brady, who it is. 7-9 in Miami, Matt. So we got to ask you, you know, why have the Patriots struggled in Miami, in your opinion? And does it really matter that they've struggled in Miami? Or are you one of those guys that's like, you know what, 10 years ago doesn't matter. We're just talking about 2018.
Well, that's the thing. I don't know how much it really matters because – you know, last year they obviously stunk. It was one of the worst front-to-back games we've ever seen.
Yeah,
the Brady Belichick Patriots.
2 weeks, but, you know, 2 week gap. It was like night and day.
At the same time, they didn't have Gronkowski or Edelman on offense in that game, so they struggled to move the ball without their two best weapons. And defensively, I don't even know what the hell. I don't know how you describe that, getting lit up by Jay Cutler.
Yeah,
but I mean, you can't blame the weather for that game. That was Monday night.
Yeah,
you know, it's like I think it's just a matter of mostly executing on the field. But at the same time, like, you have to at least factor the weather in a little bit. Like, it's something you have to be prepared for, going from practicing in the 35-degree weather wind at Gillette, going there to going down to Miami in the heat and humidity. It's definitely a change. And, like, you have to think about your conditioning and all that stuff. And that you got to be cognizant of that. And I think maybe their struggles in Miami maybe is sort of a reflection of how prepared they are for that. It's not like it's going to sneak up on them. They've been doing this forever. So, I mean, it's just like last year they stunk, but in 2016 they dominated them. You know, Michael Floyd had a big game.
Oh, yeah.
In 2016, the Michael Floyd game, I guess we can call it.
But, that was a great Edelman with the great block, I think it was.
It was Floyd with someone.
Okay, okay.
Yeah. On a big Edelman run.
Yeah, and, got those backwards.
Yeah, but like that, they played great that day. So yeah. Like, and that was at 1 p.m.
Yeah.
And, like, they stunk last year, and it was Monday night.
Right, and then that 2014 one with Revis' first game as a Patriot, I think it was. They didn't really know what they were yet at that point. Right. It was one of those September games.
And then I think Brady had 500 passing yards one time, and 07 he threw 6 touchdowns. Yeah. So it's like, I don't know. I feel like it's more of a product of what's happening on the field and the teams that they're putting out there. And this year, the Miami's 5-1 at home, and they've played pretty well. I mean, the one thing I wonder about with the Dolphins is how many points they've given up when they've faced better offenses, better quarterbacks. I think the Packers scored over 30 on them.
Yeah.
The Texans scored 42. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me. I don't know how much of that was offense, but I imagine they gave up a lot of points to, you know, Deshaun Watson. So, and like against the Bills, they've had good days, but that's the Bills offense. You know? So like, I'm curious to see how the Patriots offense looks, because we've been watching them all year. It's the drive to drive inconsistency is the most confusing thing to me. Like, they look unstoppable on the opening drive. They dominate the fourth quarter. And then in between, it's a bunch of up and down. Like, what the hell is going on here?
Yep.
So, I think the one thing they really need to clean up is the penalties. They've had 12 offensive penalties the last two games. They had 13 in the first 10. So, I mean, obviously that's something they got to turn around. And, you know, it's just going to come down to how they execute on the field. I know that's sort of boring, and that's they're going to tell you. But, like, I just feel like you can't really factor in the weather as much when you've seen what's gone down the last 2 years. It's really just about what's happening out there on the field.
That's what they try to – that's what they always tell us. It's always about execution, Adam. You know that too. But I think that we're trying to figure out, like, this, like, secret that just doesn't exist, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, everyone's asking, you know, what is it about Miami? What is it about – it just – you know what? The Dolphins have just played well in some of the games that they've gone down there. The Patriots haven't played well. And there is no secret formula. There is no secret sauce that can kind of turn this thing around. Adam, that Monday night game last year, it was on my birthday. It was not a very good birthday present. It was one of the very bad game the Patriots have had in a long time, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, this topic comes up every single year, and it's just sort of one of the more, you know, it's just sort of weird, isn't it? Because, like, the Patriots are usually better than the Dolphins, and it doesn't really always play out that way down there. So, you know, I don't know what the you know, what the magic thing is down there, what the formula is. But like with this year's Dolphins team, the way I look at it is, you know, they've got some decent playmakers on offense. You know, like a Devontae Parker, you know, he might not be like, you know, one of those top shelf receivers, but he's somebody that can hurt you, you know, if he's having a good game. And, you know, like a guy like Kenyon Drake, for instance, like in that offense, I think can be sort of a dangerous guy, you know, like he's got good speed. If he gets into the open field, he can hurt you. You know, one of the things that I think hurts them a little bit is, you know, I don't know how much, but one guy I really liked for them in this offense was Jakeem Grant, and he's injured. You know, he got injured, and I think, like, if he was in the game, like, he'd be one of those guys that the Patriots would have to really game plan for just because of his speed. I mean, I know he's short, but he's one of those guys you can do a lot of different things with, especially today with how creative offenses have gotten. So, you know, looking at their game last week against the Bills, I mean, it felt like Josh Allen ran for 300 yards against them almost. But the way I look at it, this Miami Dolphins team, I say, you know, they've got some guys on offense who can hurt you a little bit. And, you know, it would be a little different if they had Grant, in my opinion, but they've got some speed guys, and Parker on the outside and is somebody that can really hurt. He's sort of a big bodied guy. So if I were to, you know, sort of craft a situation for where the Dolphins would win, it would be where, you know, the Patriots have problems with their open field tackling and not taking that same step where they took with the Vikings, where they were, you know, really good in that area.
Yeah, when the Dolphins started the season 3-0, just watching their offense tape, they had Albert Wilson was on a historic pace when it came to a yards after contact, yards after catch standpoint. I think he was averaging something like 18 yards after the catch per reception. It was like, it was insane. He was leading the league by, you know, a wide, wide margin. Now he's hurt too. Their offense early on in the season was really creative. They ran a ton of trick plays. They were throwing passes with their receivers. They were doing double reverses. They were having wide receivers run it, like kind of like what the Patriots have done with Patterson a little bit. They've been doing stuff like that. And then Ryan Tannehill got hurt. Albert Wilson got hurt. And now these last couple weeks, they've kind of been more of a conventional offense, trying to get Ryan Tannehill back into the mix. So I think that the thing with Miami, you know, there are not a whole lot of teams when you look across the board of all these divisions that have such a different climate change within the division, where, you know, every year you're going from Foxborough or Boston, that's, you know, 30 degrees this time of year, to playing a game in 80 degree weather. Yeah. You know, most teams are pretty, it's the divisions are pretty regional, or, you know, everybody's a dome team, or, you know, something like that. And in this case, it's a very different climate, obviously, from New York and Buffalo and Boston to Miami. It's pretty stark, and I think that is something that has to be, you know, accounted for. I know when the Patriots went down to play Jacksonville, it was 100 degrees out.
Yeah, it was
incredibly hot. Now it's not going to be that hot in Miami, but as much as the players and the Patriots just didn't play well that day, the heat was definitely a factor. I'm not making an excuse. I'm just saying that it had to have been a factor, because it was a factor for everybody that was at the stadium that day. Yeah. I mean, just sitting there in the stands or in the press box, you were sweating. So I think that a lot of, you know, that climate change has to be a factor in this whole thing if you're trying to look for anything that is a trend. You know, what's weird about it is that they've lost 4 out of 5 recently. It's not like a lot of those losses were piled up against like the Jason Taylor, Ricky Williams, you know, the really good Dolphins teams of the early 2000s, where if the Patriots weren't in the division at that time, the Dolphins might have been making a few deep playoff runs instead of the Patriots. So I think it's a climate thing a little bit. And also, you know, you just have to give, I think Adam Gase is one of the better game plan coaches in the league, where he can really scout the other team and he can really say, you know, all right, what we did against them last time really didn't work. and we're going to completely change the game plan this time. Bill Belichick acknowledged that this week, that last year, their second time around the game in Miami, the Dolphins had a completely different game plan. It didn't resemble anything that they did 2 weeks earlier, and it really took the Patriots kind of by surprise that they really reinvented themselves so quickly. This time, they've had 10 weeks to kind of think about it, so I would expect a whole different game plan once again from them after getting beat by 31 points. You're obviously not going to come out with the same exact plan. So I think Gase is a pretty good game plan coach, which kind of checks Belichick's ability to be a game plan coach too, where he's looking at one thing that the Dolphins have been doing all year, and Gase does a nice job of doing something different that maybe the Patriots haven't expected in the past. So I would say that all those things kind of add up to, 7-9 for Brady, losing yeah. 4 out of 5 of the last game down there. But this time around, this is a big one, I think, for the Patriots. They should go 6-0 against the division. They haven't done it that often as you would expect. They haven't run the table against the division. There always seems to be one game where they kind of slip up. But with the Chiefs being where they're at, the Houston Texans, the Chargers, all these teams kind of lumped together at the top of the AFC, Matt, they could really use this one.
Yeah, this is the hat and t-shirt game, they like to call it. So yeah. they know how important it is. Not just to, sew up the division again, but to keep winning. Like the Chargers and the Texans especially, they keep putting pressure on them to keep winning games. And I know they have the tiebreaker over Houston, but my colleagues at the Sports Hub were going over this. There's like a weird scenario where if they all went out, Patriots, Texans, Chargers, I think they said the Chargers would be the number one seed.
Yeah, well, they can leapfrog the Chiefs and straight the victory, the schedule, they might be able to,
So, like, the Patriots don't really even control their own destiny at this point. Like, they're hoping for a slip-up from both the Chiefs and the Chargers, which is a little complicated because they play each other. But I think they just the number one thing is they just have to take care of their own business. And this is a tough spot for them to do that, considering they haven't played their best football. They haven't, put together a full – let's say they haven't put together a full 60 minutes on the road.
Yeah.
Because it was close against the Jets. They played about, 35 minutes of good football, which was a step up from the 0 minutes of good football they played in Tennessee. So, it's historically been a tough place. And, we make it seem like they just stink and they can't win down there in Miami. 7-9, it's not a good record, but, that's just awful compared to what they usually do. So, I don't know. I think the whole struggling down in Miami thing is a little overblown. And I'm predicting a rock fight because I'm predicting both offenses to have issues.
Yeah.
I'm predicting 22-19 Patriots, but I think it's going to come down to what happens in the fourth quarter, how they manage the clock and, how they keep their discipline and execute the way they usually do. And I think Bill Belichick and Tom Brady are just going to be a little bit ahead of Adam Gase and Ryan Tannehill in that department. Or that, if it comes down to a field goal game, I still feel better about Gostkowski than,
The funny thing is that game last year on Monday Night Football, we kind of all think of it as – it was a 7-point game. The Dolphins won that game 27-20. It's kind of looked at as like this big blowout of as horrible performance.
Did they score garbage time?
Did they score late? I think it was, I just looked at the final score.
I remember it was 27-7.
It was ugly for a while, 100%. I'm just saying that at the end of the day,
they had a chance to fight back, but they ran out of time. That's basically what happened.
All right, so the last one we wanted to ask you here, just matchup wise, give us one player on the Dolphins that you're kind of circling as like if he could wreck the game for the Patriots if things go poorly.
I think it's got to be Cameron Wake. That's like an easy choice. Yeah, he's always giving him trouble. But I think when you look at who they're going to have going up against him, Marcus Cannon, Ladron Wall, maybe even Gronk gets a couple of reps.
Yeah.
But him on that left defensive end, he's always giving him trouble, and it's just. Crazy. There's no mystery to him. They're really familiar with him, but he's just such a freak.
Yeah.
Still, what is he, 35 years old now?
He's going to be 37 actually in January.
He's having another good year. This is obviously another simple one, but obviously the Patriots offense has gone as their pass protection has gone.
Yeah.
Particularly on the road. And I don't remember how big of an issue it was in Detroit, but definitely in Jacksonville and Tennessee. There was a ton of pressure up front of Brady, whether it was off the edge, up the middle. Yep. There were a lot of plays where Brady just, gave up and just went down and took the sack because there was nowhere to go with the football and you didn't have enough time. And I think, as the pass protection has gone, the Patriots have gone. So I think if they can keep Wake at bay and they can, give him good protection up front, I think it'll bode well for the offense. And Adam touched on the open field tackling. That was another thing that was a big issue for them. In their three losses, I think all three of them.
Yeah.
So, that's a big issue, but I think as long as they can if they can protect against Cameron Wake, then I think it'll be a good day for the offense.
Yeah, Cameron Wake kind of took the torch from Jason Taylor, and they just like Jason Taylor has sacked Tom Brady more than any player in Tom Brady's career, and Cameron Wake is fourth on that list.
Yeah,
they kind of just passed the torch right off to him. Adam, one player, I think I might know who you're going with, but I'm curious to hear what you say.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to Kenyon Drake.
I had it. I was like, I know where he's going.
Yeah, like he's not somebody that puts up huge numbers or anything, but he's the type of back that can have success against the Patriots. He's like one of those fast guys who can come out of the backfield and, you know, catch passes and make a few guys miss. And he's just one of those frustrating guys where he's just, you know, he's picking up first downs and then all of a sudden he gets a 20 yarder and then, you know, they're in position to score. Like, I think he scored I don't know how long it was, maybe a 10-yard touchdown against the Bills where they just swung him out of the backfield and he was just wide open. So like any type of running back where you can work him into the passing game, I think will give we'll just sort of challenge the Patriots defense. I mean, and I think he's just that kind of guy. He's quick, he's fast, and he had a nice 20-yard run too against the Bills last week that I thought, you know, was pretty critical in their win. So I think Drake is one of those guys. He's not always consistent. He's not like a superstar player, but he's one of those guys that can just really hurt you in one game setting.
Yeah, I agree with that one 100. I agree with both of you, but with Drake, he's a very explosive player too. And he's the type of guy that can definitely in the passing game run one of those wheel routes by a linebacker and catch like a 70-yard touchdown. And no one's really going to be, you know, that surprised to see him do that. He's a very like boomer bust type player. I know like fantasy owners will tell you, you know, one week he'll have 30 points and the next week he'll have zero.
I own him. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll tell you yeah.
That. So he's, you know, there's the chance that he has one of those kind of game breaking games. I like both of those. I would have picked one of those, but because I went third here, I'll go with Minkah Fitzpatrick. The rookie has been playing a lot more on the outside lately, but I think that he's really a matchup kind of player for the Dolphins. I'm very interested to see without Xavier Howard in the lineup, do they put him on Josh Gordon? Do they put him on Gronk? Where does he go? And I think that there's a chance if he has, you know, the game that he is capable of having, that he could take one of those guys out completely for the Patriots in this game, whether it's Gronk or Josh Gordon, if he plays on the outside some more. Early on in the season, he was really kind of playing that slot safety, box safety role that I think a lot of people thought he was going to play out of college. But over the last 2 weeks, he's basically been on the boundary for the majority of the time playing outside corner. So where he's at, who he goes up against, if he has a good game, I mean, then you're going to have to start looking to some of those other options in the passing game that aren't Josh Gordon, that aren't Gronk, and see where you can win there. And it kind of gets a little bit dicey. But I think with Miami, it's always been the pass rush, right? You know, whenever the Patriots have had problems with them, it seems like it's been Cameron Wake and then, you know, obviously Jason Taylor back in the day. And this very good
Olivier Vernon back in the day.
Olivier Vernon,
Robert Quinn.
Yeah, a good Miami front. This front, I don't think, is quite as good as maybe in years past, but still definitely a scary group of guys. All right, Matt, thank you so much for coming on. Now's the time of the show that we usually tease a bunch of stuff that we have coming up for the listeners to go check out. So tell everybody where they can follow you, where they can read you, and if you want to tease any articles or anything you have coming up.
Oh, you can follow me on Twitter at Matt Dolloff, MattDolloff. Hopefully there's a video for you on Sunday after the game. And pregame, there's going to be a little thing on Cameron Wake coming out. So obviously cool. I've been looking into him a little bit. So you can look forward to that on 98.5thesportshub.com.
Look at that as a tease. Adam, Army-Navy, what do we got going on this weekend?
Well, actually, we're, you know, signing day's coming up, the first one. So we're doing a lot of recruiting stuff. Actually, a couple of days ago, I went and talked to the new UMass coach, Walt Bell, who I think is kind of an interesting guy, very detail-oriented. And his views on recruiting were actually pretty interesting. I got something coming out today on the prospects coming out of Brockton, including a sophomore named Navon Reed, who everybody's going to have to know if they're following local recruiting. He's already getting a ton of interest from BC, just a stud. And then, you know, we're going to do some other, you know, college related stuff, especially towards recruiting with, you know, these last days coming down towards the first signing period on the 19th.
We got a history lesson today from Bill Belichick on the Army-Navy game. Yeah. Going back to 1960s, with JFK and Roger Staubach
through the photo archives.
Yeah, that was pretty funny and actually pretty interesting. You know, Belichick, you don't ask him about his team's play or the scheme or anything like that. You ask him about Army-Navy and he'll talk to you about it for, you know, a good 2 hours. And that's kind of what we got today. But on clnsmedia.com, my Patriots game plan is already out about, you know, kind of what the Dolphins did in week 4 and looking how I think that they'll change that up this time around so they don't get beat by 31 points. Yeah. And also writing something about Landon Roberts, really candid, one of my favorite pieces I've written all year. A lot of the coaches, a lot of his teammates giving me some really honest answers about a guy who I think a lot of Patriots fans are kind of sour on, let's just say. And, you know, he gave me a lot of really good answers and kind of acknowledged a lot of the stuff about, you know, how he's struggled in coverage and what he's done to kind of get better in those areas. So
he sucks, Mike.
So a really cool piece. One of my favorite pieces I've written all year. He listens. So just, no, I don't know if he does.
That wasn't me. That was Tony.
But it was really, it was refreshing because you don't normally get honest opinions out of coaches and out of players out of the Patriots locker room. And right. Everybody that I asked for this story gave me really honest opinions about Landon and you know, acknowledged the fact that he hasn't really been very good in coverage in the past and how he's kind of improved that. So that'll be out on Saturday. If you're listening to this on Friday, if you're listening to it after that, it'll already be out. So go ahead and check that out. And then Adam and I will be back next week. Little game against the Pittsburgh Steelers, Adam.
Yeah.
The Patriots are going to be playing. We'll see who the guys on the Steelers side of the ball that are healthy. Is James Conner going to play? We don't know that yet. Antonio Brown will be there. Ben Roethlisberger will be there. And even though this one has kind of lost a little bit of the juice that maybe it was going to get because the Steelers have lost, you know, a couple of games here lately. They're 7-4-1, I think, now. So even if the Patriots lose this game to Pittsburgh, they still are ahead of Pittsburgh in the standings. So it's not quite a for the number one seed type game that maybe it would have been last year or, you know, maybe earlier in the season that we would have expected, but still going to be a really good one in Pittsburgh, obviously. So another tough road test for the Patriots. So we'll break that game all down next week as well. But Matt, thanks once again, man. That was great for coming on with us, and we'll have you on again soon. Maybe in the playoffs or whenever we can get you back on. But until then, signing off for Adam Kirchin, for Matt Dolliff, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, man.